Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's Behind the Curtain podcast. I'm Paul Lisnick, and well, this week we're just going to focus in on politics, but we're going to do it through the eyes of a man who has been watching and living and breathing this stuff for decades now. His career on TV, radio, in print, so incredible. It's actually just such an honor to have him here for all the work he's done through the years. He's the author of lots of books. His current book is called Bill Press from the Left. And one of the things I'm amazed about this book is that it gets praised not only from people on the left like Governor Jerry Brown, Maxine Waters. It doesn't get any more left than that. But he also gets praised from Tucker Carlson and Ann Coulter. How does one guy walk the line between those two worlds with respect from everybody? Well, he gets there because as a host of Crossfire and all the things he's done, he's impressed everybody with his work. He's appeared on Politics Tonight, but now I get him on the podcast. Bill Press, welcome to the show.
Hey, Paul, it's great to get behind the curtain with you. Thank you for the good words, the kind words.
And as you know, I have read your book. I love this book. I hope we got a few sold when you appeared on the TV show. And we're going to talk about the book. There's so much current news we've got to talk about. But I want to set it up with one thing that I learned from reading the book, which is, you weren't born to be a liberal Democrat. That's not where you were supposed to end up. So I do want you to put in space here for people, frame this, how you ended up where you are currently, and then I think we get to talk current politics.
Well, just the opposite of being a liberal Democrat, right? I mean, I grew up in a small town in Delaware. It was, back in the 50s, a segregated small town in Delaware. Very conservative, grew up a strict Catholic. My grandfather was a Republican mayor of our town. My father was a Republican mayor of our town after him. All of my brothers and sisters are Republicans. And again, going to a strict Catholic high school, I had a pretty conservative education, if you will. As I grew older, I just saw that a lot of the stuff that I'd been brought up with was wrong. I mean, it was wrong. Any form of discrimination was wrong. It was wrong to consider LGBT, we call them. We had different names for them, right? Americans as being second-class citizens.
Right.
I saw that the war in Vietnam was wrong. I got involved in the... So gradually through college, going to school, and I had an opportunity to do some graduate studies in Europe, where the French taught me about the mistakes that they had made in Vietnam and Dien Bien Phu and why we were making the same mistakes here. So I think it was education, Paul, I'd have to say. Getting out of that small town, getting a good college education, getting some grounding in Europe. And then I went to San Francisco and started a new life. And from then on, I never looked back and got involved in politics, ended up working with Jerry Brown in California, which was really great, became Democratic State Chair of California, and then on to CNN and Crossfire, and the rest is history.
The rest is history. And of course, you now sit in the liberal chair when you do what you do. And yet, when you and I have talked, and you write about this in your book, when asked who you admire most, you don't say, and not that you don't admire these people, but you don't say John F. Kennedy, you don't say Martin Luther King. You said John McCain.
Well, yes, I did. I still admire John McCain. I think of all the politicians I've met in Washington, he's right up there. When I was doing Crossfire, people would always ask me, "You've met all these guys. Is there any one of them that you admire?" And I would always say, without hesitation, John McCain, even though I'm a lifelong Democrat. And I admire John McCain because he's a maverick. I mean, you know, he lost that a little bit when he ran for president, but then he kind of got it back. But he was willing to... he was very accessible to the media. He would always give you a straight answer, never duck it. And he was willing to take on the leadership of his party when he thought they were wrong. I admire that in a politician. I admired it in John McCain. I admired it in Bob Kerry. Remember him? He was that kind of a Democrat. Look, I voted for Republicans as a Democrat. I think it's important to keep have good note of cynicism and to keep an open mind.
So let's turn to modern day. Obviously, the news of this week, so many things to talk about, but Roseanne Barr certainly grabbed headlines when she tweeted a jab at Valerie Jarrett.
Disgusting.
Yeah, you've got the tweet there. You want to read the tweet? Because, I mean, people, we have to, you know, not everybody knows what we're talking about. So what exactly did Roseanne Barr tweet?
Well, Roseanne Barr tweeted, writing about Valerie Jarrett, who was, you know, here you go, right? Chicago's own, right? Very successful businesswoman in Chicago. I think, deputy mayor in Chicago. And then a friend of Michelle and Barack Obama came to the White House, raised a lot of money, helped them in the campaign, particularly in the business community, came to the White House for 8 years, was one of Obama's closest advisors, a wonderful lady, I know her, and really didn't stir up any controversy in the White House at all. I don't know why she'd be a target for Roseanne Barr, but Roseanne, who, of course, relaunched her show with the big kudos from Donald Trump, what, about a month ago, maybe?
He started tweeting. He didn't care about anything else. It was Roseanne Barr and how great she is, because she was pro-Trump in the show. That's all he had to hear.
Yeah, she was pro-Trump, but, I mean, this, like, just started, right?
So yeah, that's correct.
She tweets out earlier today about Valerie Jarrett, quote, Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby equals VJ, Valerie Jarrett. I mean, Planet of the Apes, Valerie Jarrett, born in Iran, an African-American, just a totally racist, disgusting comment. And ABC News fired her on the spot, canceled her show.
It did not take them long.
No, didn't take them long, to their credit. Came out today and said, quote, I'm reading ABC Entertainment President Channing Dungy, came out this week at any rate, right? Quote, right afterward, Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show.
Now, I think a lot of people are going to take the side of ABC, saying you did the right thing. Wanda Sykes, of course, great African-American comedian. She is an executive producer on the show, or a creative producer on the show. She quit. Melissa, what's her name? Sarah Gilbert, whatever, who plays one of the daughters, she came out and said, this is not our view. So, okay, fast action. Words have consequences. Now, as we talk now, Bill, we do not yet know what the president's reaction is. So let's pull our crystal balls out, because I don't think the president lets it go, and I think he supports his friend who likes him. So how does that play out? When we start getting campaign rally comments or tweets that start to say whatever he says, attacks on ABC and, you know, Roseanne is right, his 40% stays with him, don't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Donald Trump, the truest thing he ever said, Paul, I think, was when he said he could go out in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody and his supporters would still be behind him.
Turns out to be true.
Right. I would not be surprised if Donald Trump, he hasn't done it yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if he not only fully supports Roseanne Barr, but attacks ABC News, said this is, he'll say this is cowardly, this is whatever, fake news.
Right.
And the problem is, Roseanne Barr has suffered the consequences of this. Other people have suffered the consequences of saying some really stupid things. Donald Trump says makes racist, ugly comments all the time. He's a president of the United States, and he gets away with it.
And a lot of times, because people's reaction is, well, don't go by what he says, go by what he does, go by what he means, and, you know, and there's a cover for that. But I think it's going to be a tough road to walk, because you can defend your friend. The thing is, another friend might come out and say, Roseanne is a friend of mine, she's a good-hearted person, I she made this mistake. They would find a way to basically said, she's a good person who did a bad thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's fair enough for a friend to do. But you're not going to get that from the president. I really do think you're going to get him to support what she said all of that. And my question is, when you do that, how does that not even cross a line for some people?
Well, I don't get it. I can't get in their head. I mean, this is behavior that people accept from Donald Trump. They would accept from no other president and probably no other person or no other friend. But remember, it wasn't that long ago that this Kelly Sadler, White House aide, made this disgusting comment about John McCain. We don't care what he says about the new Gina Haspel, the new director of the CIA,
right,
because John McCain's dying anyway, right?
Right.
Now, at least you would say that
he never even responded.
That she would apologize. She did not. Or that the president of the United States would say, that's not who we are. You know, that was over the line. And I think it was a fireable offense, but at least he should have apologized or criticized her for it. Not a peep out of Donald Trump. So, of course, he's not going to condemn what Roseanne Barr said. He'll defend her.
And as we shift to the Mueller investigation, he's been tweeting a storm this week. And,
yeah.
And I mean, it looks like here, what I love. God, there's so much to talk about, Bill. It's, you know, all the people investigating, they're all Democrats. They're all Obama people, even though the leaders are all Trump appointees. Mm-hmm. It just boggles the mind how he talks about this witch hunt and everything else. I'm not even getting into the, I understand his supporters, and I'm sure his supporters listen to this podcast as well. I'm not saying he did anything. We don't know yet because Mueller doesn't talk. But what boggles my mind is how you look at a series of Republicans and career professionals and just call them Democrats and call them whatever, and then 40% of the country buys it.
It's unprecedented for any president, let alone a Republican president, to declare war on the Department of Justice, his Department of Justice, and the FBI, you know, the American people's FBI, if you will. I mean, I don't see how you can – he every single day – it's an attack on Jeff Sessions, an attack on Rod Rosenstein, an attack on Christopher Wray, James Comey, now Christopher Wray, and an attack on Robert Mueller because of a criminal investigation into his administration. If that's not obstruction of justice, trying to unravel or undo or shoot down an investigation into his own administration, I don't know what is.
And, of course, the most current tweets where he talks about 13 angry Democrats along with people who worked 8 years in the Obama administration are going to be, and he puts it in all caps, meddling in the 2018 election. So it looks like the new strategy is to say that this entire witch hunt is all about giving Democrats power and control because, of course, they're all Democrats. Now, that's what this is about. Of course, excuse me. Well, the Department of Justice has a rule that says they don't touch, they don't indict anybody while they are 60 days out.
Right. Well, so you're right. There's so much to talk about, and this all does fit together. But what Donald and Rudy Giuliani let the cat out of the bag. I mean, he said the other day very clearly on ABC that what this is all about is trying to influence public opinion and undermine the credibility of Robert Mueller. So all of Donald Trump's tweets about witch hunt, all of his tweets about they should be investigating Hillary, that they're not looking, the real collusion was with Hillary's campaign. This latest nonsense that which is, by the way, a flat-out lie that the FBI planted a spy in his campaign. Zero evidence of that.
Right.
Just like, this is like the birther controversy, right? Or, remember,
and that one caught on, too. Let's remember, it's not like that went away.
No, that's right. But and Trump is the guy that said that Antonin Scalia was murdered in the desert, didn't die. I mean, you know, he's got all these caca conspiracy theories. The latest is on the spy thing. But all the purpose of that, as Rudy said, is to undermine the credibility of Robert Mueller. So whatever he comes up with, people may not, more people will question it or maybe not even believe it. So it is pure propaganda. And remember, here's what I think is important, that what this does show. No, the FBI didn't have a spy in his campaign, but they were looking into his campaign. Why? Because they had evidence that at least two Trump people at the time, George Papadopoulos and Carter Page, were meeting secretly with Russians in London to connect the Trump campaign with Russian Kremlin operatives for the purpose of getting dirt on Hillary Clinton. It's a crime for Russia to interfere in an American election, and it's a crime for anybody to help them, which is what the FBI was looking into.
I also love that, of course, the efforts to get the president to sit down with Robert Mueller, right? And then Rudy Giuliani, who these days says he doesn't have to. He's the president. You don't have to do that. And, of course, he gets hit. I'm sure you've seen these interviews where he gets hit with what he said when Bill Clinton was subpoenaed to testify. And, of course, his comments there was nobody's above the law. Of course he has to testify. And when he was hit with that old footage, he got angry that somebody would hit him with that.
Oh, yeah. How dare you, right?
How dare you with telling me my own words.
And so the other thing is, I keep pointing this out to people. So what this really means is, think about it. During the 2016 campaign, the FBI was investigating Hillary Clinton for the use of this private email server. Criminal investigation, we knew all about it. And by the way, that hurt Hillary Clinton, particularly when James Comey reopened the investigation on October 28, 10 days before the election. But what we didn't know is at the same time they had a criminal investigation underway of the Trump campaign, James Comey decided to make one of those investigations public in violation of DOJ rules, and the other one to keep secret as a DOJ provider because it was during an election. So I think, Paul, that Donald Trump ought to be out there thanking the FBI and thanking James Comey for covering up for him. Because you know what? If the American people knew that he was under a criminal investigation then, that would have changed some votes and may have changed the outcome of the election.
Well, I agree. That is part of what gets me. I mean, the whole Hillary thing got put on the table, and you know, you can debate what got influenced, but you certainly can't. You can argue. You really find a tough time arguing that putting all the Hillary information out there prior to the election didn't influence anything. It could have, but clearly the absence of Trump investigation information certainly didn't hurt. It only helped, and you're absolutely right, and then somehow to twist it around. You know, part of me, when I think of the American people and the people who just don't question anything, I heard an analyst say the other day, if the president said water isn't wet, they would believe him. And I think that's true. But what gets me, Bill, and gets your reaction to it as somebody who, you know, you've sought a role in politics, you've run for office, Congress. It's Republicans in Congress. I mean, if anybody should be protecting our democracy, it at least should be our elected officials. And I had Congressman Mike Quigley on the show recently who just kind of shook his head and just said it is terrifying to him that, yes, they are rolling over and letting everything happen without even a challenge.
I believe that when the history of this period is written, yes, Donald Trump will look bad, but the people who will look worse than Donald Trump are Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and their fellow Republicans in the Congress who totally look the other way with behavior that they know is abhorrent, that they would tolerate from nobody else, and they do so for Donald Trump only because he has an R at now after his name. He used to be a Democratic donor. Now he's a Republican president.
Right.
And they have rolled over and let him take over the party and totally change the party and debase the presidency. Can you imagine? I mean, this game, I hate to play this game because we could do it almost every day, but can you imagine anybody else, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, paying $130,000 to a prostitute or a porn star, right? Not to talk about an alleged affair, and that the Republicans would just look the other way if that happened? Well, there would have been impeachment hearings started so fast. You know, make your head spin.
You know, you go on that example. Of course, I agree with you, but you don't have to go that far, Bill. How about if Bill Clinton had Chelsea's husband, Mark, handling Middle East peace?
Right.
How about if they had Chelsea sitting in the president's seat at some meeting somewhere or meeting with China? In other words, as far as I'm concerned, take anything the president has done, any bits of this at all, and put in the name Obama and Clinton, and Republicans would be absolutely over the moon and moving for impeachment now.
Or how about this?
Your turn, Bill.
Long list. Donald Trump says, there's this Chinese electronics firm we have to help out. Of course, any firm in China we know is owned by the Chinese government, right? We have to save these 75,000 jobs in China. And then that was last week. This week, Ivanka Trump gets 17 new licenses to market her jewelry and clothing and everything else in China.
Oh, there's no connection, Bill.
Of course not.
Well, and how about the fact that keep going. I'll stick with the same example. That company you're talking about, ZTE, has been known for having security and cyber concerns in our own country that during Senate questioning, people like Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, former head of the CIA, when asked, would you do any business with ZTE? Absolutely not.
Right.
Coming from his own appointees.
Mm-hmm.
But again, this is what I say. The fact that most Americans kind of don't follow things this closely, okay. But Congress... where is Congress?
No. And this is going to come back to haunt them, I think, really kick them in the ass. I mean, there's no backbone. There's no responsibility. I cannot believe how they can really, like, live with themselves or face their constituents. Things that they have preached against and that the Republican Party stood against for so long. I mean, just basically a sense of decency and civility about the office of the presidency, they don't give a damn anymore.
I spent the holiday time, barbecue time with some fairly wealthy, very intellectual people. So I have to say that because while they're primarily conservative and Republican, they weren't Trump fans, but they deal with it. And yet, during this particular barbecue, a couple of them said, you know, I see the way he's treating these other countries. I like it. I like the strength we're showing to other countries. And again, without trying to put politics into it and trying to be objective, my thought is, aren't we in trouble when you have France basically saying we have no working relationship with Russia or the United States? We know our relationship with Germany is soured. The Middle East, we've now taken sides. We can't broker that peace. And yet you have people, and his poll numbers are going up, Bill, basically saying, I like what he's doing. There's something about his in-the-face attitude and lack of diplomatic approach that people like.
Well, there's no doubt that there's, and Trump sensed this, and so did Bernie Sanders, and Hillary Clinton did not, that there's a general disgust with Washington and with politics as usual and with establishment politics, if you will. And Trump appealed to that basis, to say, so did Bernie Sanders. And so to that extent, they like somebody and they wanted someone who would shake things up, right? But if you look at what that means in reality with Trump, it's been 18 months, he has alienated every one of our longest and strongest allies. Western Europe, they after the Paris Accords and after the Iran nuclear deal, they have said this. Angela Merkel has said this, so has Emmanuel Macron. Well, it's too bad the United States isn't there anymore, but we're just going to have to go our own way. We're not going to change our way, right? We're just going to have to go without them. Yeah. Canada has now said the same thing. Mexico has said the same thing. Can't count on the United States anymore. Look at South Korea. Right, we don't even have an ambassador yet appointed to South Korea. And then the president of South Korea, President Moon, puts this deal together with, the path started toward the summit. And then what does Donald Trump do without even calling President Moon? He just cancels the summit. Now they're trying to get it back on again. Maybe they will. Maybe they won't. But with Donald Trump, America first, which I think all of us sort of, we like kind of the sound of that. But with him, it's America alone, stands alone, which doesn't work today. It doesn't work in trade. It doesn't work with climate change or the environment. It doesn't work with anything.
I wonder,
but Donald Trump thinks it does. All we need is just us, nobody else.
I also wonder how it is if, again, President Obama, because that's the way I kind of reason these things out. I said, all right, take out the name Trump, put in Obama.
Yeah.
If President Obama had reached out to North Korea to meet with Kim Jong-un, that step alone would have created anarchy. The next step of we have the summit, don't have the summit, that this kind of mishmash, what would Republicans be saying about that kind of wishy-washiness in an Obama administration?
Well, they would be saying he's an amateur, he doesn't know what he's doing, right? He can't be trusted. Go down the line. They'd probably be having hearings into, you know, why he wanted to have a summit in the first place, right? With Trump, that they just turn their heads. They just look the other way. I mean, I think all Paul Ryan wanted to do was pass a tax bill giving the wealthiest of Americans a great big huge tax break and gutting every program that helps the poor. And basically, Donald Trump has gone along with that, so Paul Ryan doesn't care what else he does.
And now he can retire, Paul Ryan.
Yeah, right. In disgrace.
You know, in your book, because we get on these topics and we can talk for hours, but I do want people to read your book From the Left. And so I'm gonna bridge it over some ways, because you've worked and you write about in the book your work with Tucker Carlson on Spin Room and Pat Buchanan, of course. And so you work with as many conservatives, if not more, as you do with people on the left. How do you explain today the people on the right, although somebody like Bill,
Bill Kristol?
Yeah, Bill Kristol, who seems to, yes, I'm conservative, but not with this guy. How do you explain, maybe Tucker Carlson, because you worked so closely with him, is it real? Do they just have a line, I just have to stick with this? Sean Hannity, I mean, or do they really believe all the stuff that are the positions the president takes?
Well, you know, unlike the cowards in Congress, there are some conservative voices who really stand for principle and don't just roll over for Donald Trump. You mentioned one, Bill Kristol. I admire him for that. Michael Gerson, columnist for the Washington Post, has a very strong piece this morning George Will says Donald Trump is already the worst, president in history. Now, when it comes to Tucker, Tucker's a good friend, and I saw him just last week. We very seldom talk politics anymore because
it's probably easier that way, right?
It's easier that way. All I can say about Tucker is, you know, he now is doing what he's doing. He's the number two highest rated cable show in television. And I think that says a lot for some of the positions that Tucker takes. Let me just leave it at that.
All right. I won't push you. Although, are you telling me that when you didn't talk politics, but you didn't sort of get any inkling of him along the lines of going, you know, Bill, I have a job to do. Let's leave it at that.
No. But I must say that Tucker and I really became friends when we were doing Crossfire together at CNN. And neither one of us took that ourselves that seriously or politics that seriously. And both of us fought the management at CNN because we felt sometimes they were putting too much pressure on us to go this way or that way, and we were our independent selves. And Tucker never took himself, as I said, too seriously, neither did I. And there were some issues, particularly immigration, abortion, gay rights, that Tucker just wouldn't go there because that's not stuff that he himself believed.
Right. So he tried to keep things at least where he could make an argument and believe himself.
Exactly. Right.
You also attended White House briefings. You write about that in the book. See, I'm tying to the book.
Yes,
but
thank you.
In looking at Sarah Sanders these days, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, so, you know, there's so much. You hear journalists say, why do we even have these briefings? All we're getting is, you know, White House spin and lies. Was there a time that you could actually go to a White House briefing and get your answers and get things cleared up and that's how things happened? Or Sarah Sanders just next in the line of what White House press secretaries do?
Well, first, let me say this, that the White House press secretary's job is to present the administration's point of view and to tell you as little as they can get away with, basically, right? And it's our job as White House reporters, and I am part of the White House press corps, to push and to press for answers and keep pushing and pressing for answers and not to just accept anything face value. Yes, there was a time. It wasn't that long ago, Paul, a year and a half ago, when I went to the briefing every day when Robert Gibbs was there, Jay Carney was there, Josh Earnest was there, and the briefings were under Obama, the briefings were substantive. Yeah, it got a little testy at times when we were pushing, and they didn't, you know, they were pushing back, right? But every day, I came out with answers to questions, with more information on what the administration was up to, and made it worthwhile. Under Sarah Huckabee Sanders, it is, I think, almost, they should still have briefings, but these briefings, for the most part, are a waste of time because they're very short. They're like 15 minutes long now, and it is, there's no information. It's just war, basically open warfare where she's insulting people, putting people down, ignoring people, and not answering any questions.
And we know the president is watching that press conference, and she certainly outlived Sean Spicer. I can't do a day count, but I'm thinking she's there longer than he was. He likes what he gets. The president likes what he sees.
She has an audience of one, and she plays to that audience, and that's what it's all about. He could not be happier than he is with her performance.
By the way, the president recently, there were some more comments and speeches on draining the swamp. And the whole, and we don't even have to get into the depth of Scott Pruitt, but there's nobody swampier than Scott Pruitt. How does the president get away with talking about we're draining the swamp like never before, but yet he just doesn't address Scott Pruitt, who has 12 congressional investigations looking at what he's done?
Well, again, he gets away with it because the Congress doesn't care. The Republicans call him up there, and he may get some tough questions from Democrats, but the Republicans wouldn't do anything. But at the same time, Congress can't fire Scott Pruitt. With the separation of powers, Donald Trump, he was confirmed. He was confirmed by the Congress. Once he's confirmed, he's in until Donald Trump fires him. And there's no doubt in my mind that Donald Trump, while he fired Tom Price and he fired David Shulkin, you know, for
the VA
stuff.
Yeah.
He won't, and Scott Pruitt, the worst of all in terms of gilding the lily, right? When above all these flights and private planes and all that stuff, he won't fire Scott Pruitt because he likes what Scott Pruitt is doing, which is gutting all the clean air and clean water rules adopted under President Obama.
And Trump supporters like it too, so they don't care.
Exactly. Right.
By the way, were you at this year's, because last time we talked was before the correspondence dinner. Were you at this year's dinner?
I was.
Oh, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, you
got Michelle Wolf.
We are behind the curtain.
You got it. We're behind the curtain. You were there. You were in the room when Michelle, as they say in Hamilton, when Michelle Wolf did her routine. Did Michelle Wolf cross the line with her very personal, deep cuts? Or is the White House being too sensitive when they attack her, realizing that they do a lot of the same thing?
I thought she crossed the line. I really do. I happen to have had a conversation the night before with Sarah Huckabee Sanders at a party, because that dinner is surrounded by parties before and after. Mm-hmm. And I thanked her. I said, you know, as a member of the White House press corps, I'm really glad that you're coming to the dinner tomorrow night. It means a lot to us to have you there, because nobody came the year before.
Right.
So I said, so we really appreciate that. And she said to me, well, I hope it's going to be okay, right? I'm a little nervous. And I said, Sarah, don't be nervous. Of course there'll be some jokes, right? You know that, but don't worry. They won't cross the line. You know, we all know you go up to the line, but you don't cross it. It's all in good fun, good spirit, the whole thing. Boy, was I wrong. I was embarrassed, and I said afterwards that I thought the White House Correspondents Association owed an apology to Sarah Huckabee Sanders. And, you know, again, there's this other dinner called the Gridiron in Washington.
Sure, yeah. He didn't go to that. Oh, no, he did go to that because it wasn't televised.
He went to that one, and I was there, too. But the motto of the Gridiron, and I remember Bob Novak, I went the first time when he was president of the Gridiron, and the motto is, the Gridiron shall singe but never burn.
Ah.
And I think that's a good line. And
that was not televised. You were there. You're the first person I've talked to who was present in the room. How bad was that in terms of jabs on the president? Was it all fairly peaceful?
You know what? It was good. It was good. There were some jabs at the president. He took some jabs. He took some jabs at Jeff Sessions and Jared Kushner.
Well, of course he did.
who were sitting at head table.
Ah.
It was funny. I mean, he started. This was the time when, Kushner had lost his security clearance.
Yeah, sure.
And the president said, I'm sorry we were a little gay getting here tonight, but we couldn't get Garrett through security, which was pretty funny.
And, of course, it's funny because what we'll never know, because Kushner does now have his top secret security clearance, and what we don't know, I mean, unless you do, but I mean, it appears that the FBI cleared him, but we don't know for sure that it wasn't simply a presidential order, or maybe that would have come out if it was.
I think you're right. We don't know. And I don't know if he has the very top security clearance, at least for now. They say he's got enough to do his job, right? But look, his job, right? I mean, he could never get a job in the White House under any other administration. He's there for one reason only. I want to go back to the Gridiron for a second.
Yeah.
Moon Landrieu so there are three speakers. President, of course. Moon Landrieu spoke for the Democrats. Mayor of New Orleans, just about to become former mayor.
Right.
Or may already be. But at any rate, he was very, very good. And he's thinking about 2020, so keep your eye on him. And then Tom Cotton from Arkansas spoke for the Republicans. It was an embarrassment.
Really?
Yeah, he's just, you know, some people are good at it and some aren't, and he didn't even have good material.
Well, it's going to be easier, and Mitch Landrieu, as you talk about him, yeah, he's one to watch. In fact, I want to, you know, that's a perfect bridge, because believe it or not, we've exceeded the time we're supposed to have, but let's just go for a couple more minutes if we can.
Okay, great.
And I promise I'll have you on again and actually talk only about the book. Well, that's probably never going to happen.
But thank you for talking about the book. And by the way, it's still available wherever people buy books, right? Bookstore, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, whatever. And my website, which is BillPressShow.com, at a great big fat 40% discount.
Wow. And by the way, now, maybe you don't do this, but if somebody did go through your website and if they want it autographed, like, is there a way to make that happen?
They are all signed on
my
website. Yeah.
Oh, then that's the way to get it. I'm going to encourage people to do that. And when we promote this when we put this out on social media, I'm going to mention that as well.
Thank you. Yeah.
I want to look to 2020. You know, with a recent congressional guest on my show, I made the point, who's a Democrat, I said, you know, right now, you know, we saw the polls, the generic ballot, which, you know, had Democrats up by 16 and whatever, and that dwindled now down to about 3%. And the bottom line is, it looks as we get closer to November, looks like the country seems to be just about fine without actually turning Republicans away. I know it's a turnout game, but do you think part of the problem is that Democrats don't have a platform except we're not Trump and he's terrible, so please give me the job?
Well, I hear that a lot, but I think Democrats have a stronger message than that. First of all, let me say, It is no sure thing that Democrats are going to take back control of the House, right? Even less of a sure thing that they take back control of the Senate.
True.
But they certainly have a good shot at it for a couple of reasons. One, if you just look at the numbers, try to make this real quick, but the average Democrats have to pick up 23 seats to get control. They'd like to have more, but 23 gives them control of the House. The average loss for a party in power in the first 2 years of a president's term is 43 seats. So just if there's an average year, Democrats should be okay. The other thing is the energy, if you look at the special elections that have been held so far, there is no doubt that the energy, the momentum, the excitement is on the Democratic side.
Well, the energy and the interest is, but the results have been primarily still on the Republican side. Well, that seems to be the Democratic position. Look how close we're getting now, which doesn't give you a seat.
No, but we haven't had that many congressional races. There have been 44 races for state legislature in red districts, right?
Yeah.
Democrats flipped 39 out of 44 from red to blue, and Republicans held on to five of them. So there's something happening out there, and I think, you know, the Connor Lamb race up in Pennsylvania.
Well, that's true.
Was helpful. So I think they have a good shot, and I think their message is, look, we, in addition to we're not Trump, right, which I don't even have to say, right, is that we're there for you. We really do want to deliver on jobs and on higher minimum wage and on better working class conditions and on better schools. I mean, things that Trump promised but didn't deliver. I think the Democrats are saying we're there to fight for the middle class. Donald Trump says he was, but he hasn't done it.
Except, as you know, other than gas prices, which are horrendous right now, I don't think people are really complaining about that. I just paid $4.30 for a gallon. And the president himself once said before he was president, if gas prices are high, you blame the president and you get rid of him. That's what he said.
Yeah.
But that aside, the problem is, Bill, and I know you agree, the economy is generally strong. The things are and so people vote that pocketbook.
Yeah,
so why turn out the bums, as they say, if you're going, hey, I'm doing okay in my 401k?
You're right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, you know the numbers better than I, right? Unemployment way down. The market is way up. All the signs look good. And go figure, because a lot of people thought Donald Trump takes over and the economy is going to crash, right? I think Wall Street feels that he's basically a business guy and he's going to leave them alone. And so they feel good about the market and people are investing. And by the way, as you know, that's the most important factor in any election.
Exactly. It's the economy stupid, as James Carville once said.
Right. So I think it's going to be a challenge. I do believe Democrats will take back the House, not the Senate. But again, they've got a lot of good candidates out there. They've got a lot of work to do as well.
And the reality is, by the way, since one of the most critical things the president does is appoint judges, and we know what the president has been doing with regard to judicial appointments. And, you know, forget to the victor go the spoils. What has concerned me as a lawyer, which I am, when I see the incompetent people, some of whom, that have been appointed to these judicial positions who have never been in a courtroom in their life, don't even know. We've all seen that famous clip of Senator Kennedy from Louisiana asking a federal judicial judge, what's a motion in limine? And he didn't know. And I can tell you, Bill, that's law school 101.
Right.
No. And he couldn't answer it. That's what scares me. And so if the Democrats don't take back the Senate, you really have a problem.
Yeah. And there again goes to the congressional leadership, where they would never accept unqualified people like this before. And they are rubber stamping them in the Mitch McConnell Senate.
It's frightening. That part is frightening. And I feel like I keep saying this as a nonpartisan. I know it sounds partisan, but, you know, there's kind of an objective line to walk in that case as a lawyer, where you say you just need competent people. If they're conservative, they're conservative. But you have to have competent people doing these jobs.
No, exactly. I remember when I was working for Jerry Brown, this was not my department, right, but I was involved in all the policy stuff with Governor Brown then, this first time around. And when the governor and I would meet with the legal affairs secretary to talk about candidates for judges, that's what we looked at, right? What were their judicial credentials, right? What was their legal background? What, you know, if they were on a lower bench, you know, what were their rulings? How was their writing? What was their thinking? That kind of stuff. Party never came up. We didn't know whether they were Republicans or Democrats. We were looking for qualified judges or qualified and well experienced attorneys. Not this gang. They're strictly coming right out of the Republican Federalist Society. And as you say, some of them haven't even cracked the law book, probably.
Yeah, it's frightening. Bill, I could talk to you forever, and I wish I could, and I look forward to doing it again. But as the man who George W. Bush once said at a White House Christmas party, how did you get in here? And that story's in the book, folks, so you want to read that in the book. That happened, Bill?
It did happen.
Okay. Yeah.
He looked up, and he was stunned to see me. How did you get in here? And I said, you invited me, Mr. President. Merry Christmas.
The book is called From the Left by Bill Press. Better bookstores everywhere. Actually, any bookstore anywhere. And Amazon. And at BillPress.com where your copy
Bill Press
will
be. BillPressShow.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. BillPressShow.com.
Right.
And
yeah.
Where your copy will be autographed. Thank you for that correction. You're fabulous. I look forward to this. People, lots of people listening to this, getting the book. And your book is as much fun as it is listening to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bill.
Great visiting with you. Okay, we'll do it again.
You got it. It's a date.
Thanks, Paul.
Bye-bye.